Welcome to Good Christophian Talks. I'm Levi.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Brian. Thank you for joining us this week.
On this podcast, we select one talk a week to help us get the Bible in our daily newsfeed.
We post a new episode at the start of each week with a short intro beforehand to kind of set the stage for the talk you're about to listen to.
And now, let's talk more about this week's talk.
This week's talk is an exhortation by Brother Mitch Houghton that he gave just last week, April 23rd, at the Cranston, Rhode Island Ecclesia here in the States. His topic is Ecclesiastes. It's been in the readings lately, and he does a really good job kind of overviewing the entire book and applying it to the question of why do we go to work? He details that as in his introduction, which I thought was really helpful and stuck with me through this week. When I was at work, and I think it's a really great exhortation. I'm excited to share it. It was a suggestion suggested right after the person finished hearing it, and so that's why it's so new. It was just last week. So happy to share it. Here is Brother Mitch Houghton on Ecclesiastes.
Solomon, the wisest man to ever walk the earth, besides Christ. Kings and rulers came from all over to hear him talk, to present problems for him to solve, to ask him questions. Sometimes I wish I could lay some of my own problems before him and ask for advice. How would he handle our problems? What would he advise us to do? What questions would we ask him? This is the wisest man on earth, divinely influenced. Would we ask him the biggest questions of life that life has to offer? What about the answer to life? Why are we here? How can we live a life worth living? How can we as humans find ultimate, lasting fulfillment? And that's something that at one point or another, I think everyone considers. We work day in and day out at our jobs. We come home, rest, wake up, and do it again. And we stress out over the happenings at work. We come home, we still think about work. We go on vacation a week or two out of the year and sometimes also still think about work. And yet, when we permanently leave that job, all of that goes away. And we might ask, what was all of that stress for? Maybe we picked up a few new skills, but all those things that we stress out about disappear. All those people that we butted heads with that caused endless frustration. If we step back, what is it really? Take away the company that we are working for, and what's left? To struggle without purpose. And I'm not saying we shouldn't work hard. What I'm saying is while we get caught up in the things of this life, underlying all of it is an understanding that the worldly things we busy ourselves with, that we think are important, ultimately aren't actually that important. When we let our jobs define us, we lose sight of the bigger picture of life. When we're in between jobs, it's like coming up for air briefly before we find a new job with the next pharaoh to give our time to. If our 9-to-5 jobs define us, if it's our life's purpose, then when we leave that job, we also lose our life's purpose. We might start to consider what our lives mean again. What am I here for, if not to give my time to Pharaoh? And just maybe we have time to think about a greater purpose than our 9-to-5, before the responsibilities of life hit us again and we get right back to the job hunt and find the next place to work and put our head down once again. And that's life typically. We're too busy to consider if what we're doing is really worth it, if it really gives us any true sense of fulfillment. And that's where Ecclesiastes comes in. Ecclesiastes, we can be fairly confident, was written by Solomon. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1. The words of the preacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. This narrows down the possibilities of writers to the sons of David who were rulers, but it could be any who were rulers or kings over Judah. If we skip down to verse 12, we read, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Well, from that, we know that there are only two sons of David who were ruled over Israel from Jerusalem. Because once the kingdom split, Jerusalem was the place where the king of Judah ruled. And those two sons are Solomon and Rehoboam. And then we come to verse 16, and we read, I communed with mine own heart, saying, Lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. Now we have a much more clear answer. Between Solomon and Rehoboam, Solomon was the one who was given wisdom and understanding exceeding much. Solomon was a king. He was wise and wealthy beyond all other kings present and past. By the way, when I say he was the wisest, just understand that I do mean besides Christ. He was also incredibly busy. He had his own kingdom to run, but the rulers from all over came to ask him questions and ask for his help to solve their problems. But despite being busy, Solomon still had his head above water. He made time to consider. He put the wisest mind on earth, his mind, to the task of answering life's biggest questions. And both his journey and his answers are recorded here in Ecclesiastes for all of us. And here's something to ponder as we go through the book this morning. Notice that no one asked Solomon to answer this question. This didn't come from God. Solomon set out on this journey to answer these questions on his own. Why didn't this come from God? So just keep that in mind as we read through Ecclesiastes. And looking at the beginning, Solomon starts with a thought and a question. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 2. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? He's given life some thought, and his initial outset is this feeling of vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? What lasting value do we get from our labor? Verse 4. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goes toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, See, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. So Solomon looks at creation, and he sees the same thing. Everything is busy. Work is being done. But nothing is ever fully satisfied. All the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. No matter how much we work, we will never be satisfied. There will always be something to chase. More money, more status, more recognition, more fulfillment, more entertainment. And like the sea, we will always want for more, and yet never be filled. That is a condition of mankind. What about creating a legacy for ourselves? If we do something great, even if we can't take it with us when we die, at least maybe we'll be remembered. Verse 11, Solomon says, There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. For the vast majority of humankind, no matter how much we work, everything we did will be forgotten anyway within a generation or two. And this is the problem that Solomon set out to solve in Ecclesiastes. How do we gain lasting fulfillment? And he searches for answers without God. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. If anyone can solve this puzzle, it's Solomon, the wisest man to have ever lived. He's also a king, blessed with wealth, beyond any other king. For in much wisdom is grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. This is, of course, wisdom and knowledge of worldly things. And as we read through Ecclesiastes, we will see just how much of the world Solomon came to know, and the feeling of uselessness he gained from it. We come to chapter 2, and Solomon is going to run a test. Chapter 2 and verse 1, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. So Solomon's first test is to enjoy all the pleasures that life has to offer. It is a test of personal experience. If work brings some satisfaction, even temporarily, then he will work harder than anyone else. If entertainment and money bring some level of satisfaction, then he will experience and accumulate more than anyone before him ever had. Verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. Watch for all these action words. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water, to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house, ease of life and power over others. Also I had great possessions, of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, he's accumulating wealth, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem, and also my wisdom remained with me. He did not forget his goal among all this indulgence. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was the portion of all my labor. There is joy to be held in labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Just imagine the vast amount of both human and material resources that went into running this test. How many people were involved? How many hours in providing Solomon with all that he desired? All the workers to do the building, all the people who gathered resources, the people who refined the resources, all the people who trained for years at their craft, their music, the cattle herders, the traders, all to help Solomon run this test. More resources than any of us could ever muster, all directed at fulfilling Solomon's every desire. Solomon indulged himself to a greater extent than any of us ever could. And in the end, it still wasn't enough. He wasn't satisfied. All the joy and fulfillment he got were temporary, and he was left wanting more. How often in life do we think, if I just had a little bit more, I would be content? And yet there are people who already have what we desire. They are already where we want to be. And guess what? Sometimes they think, if I just had a little bit more, I'd be content. We can never be fully satisfied. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground, was the curse of labor to Adam in the garden. Whether for survival or want of more, there will always be labor. So what about wisdom itself? Wisdom had gained Solomon much in this life. It had helped solve so many problems already. Could wisdom provide any fulfillment? Verse 12, chapter 2. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? Even that which hath been already done. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then I said in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity, for there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Wisdom is great to have. It is better than being a fool, by far. But in the end, death comes for all, regardless of how wise or foolish. All is vanity. Verses 24 to 25. Here's Solomon's conclusion of this test. Here is nothing better for man than that he should eat and drink, that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God, for who can eat or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? So it's a blessing from God that while we do have to work our entire lives, labor does provide some amount of temporary satisfaction and fulfillment. I've tried it to a greater extent than anyone else can, says Solomon, and the emptiness that you experience now is the same that you'll experience if you take work to an extreme. This life is not designed to provide eternal satisfaction. So don't try to go too far with it. Understand that enjoyment is temporal and appreciate it for what it is when you can. And he echoes this in chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes in verse 22. Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? So having concluded this test of experience, Solomon begins the next experiment. And this is an experiment of observation. And the first thing that he observes is life's oppressions and unfairness. What if a person's situation robs them of their enjoyment? Ecclesiastes 4 and verses 1 to 2. So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Wherefore, I praise the dead which are already dead, more than the living which are yet alive. In verse 4, again I considered all the travail and every right work, that for this is a man envied of his neighbor. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. The joy of a job well done can be tarnished when one is envied by their neighbor for it, and what little joy he was looking forward to is taken away. Just because we did the work doesn't guarantee that we will have a chance to appreciate and gain the joy. Verse 5, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. The fool doesn't get any satisfaction from labor because he doesn't do any. Skip over to chapter 5 and verse 8. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and they be higher than they. Some are oppressed by those who are in higher positions than they, and those in higher positions can be oppressed by those in positions higher than them. Skip to chapter 6 and verse 1. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth. Yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease. Some seem to have all that one could want in life. But maybe they die early and are not able to partake of the satisfaction that they expected. And everything that they had is passed on to someone else. Verse 6. Yea, though we live 1,000 years twice old, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place? So here's the opposite situation. Some may be blessed with a long life, but they experience no good, and in the end, die anyway, as all do. So what's Solomon doing with these examples? What's his thought process? In the first experiment, he established that even if we do not gain everlasting satisfaction from labor, at least we can gain something temporary. He's established something that feels somewhat like an answer. But in the second test, he's observing cases where that answer is not always true. There are those who do honest work and do not get any fulfillment from it, even temporarily. So the answer he came up with in the first test is now thrown back into question. Any security we feel that may have been gained by the initial answer is now once again broken down. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. We don't know how life will work out. We may not even get to enjoy the little that we were hoping to. Life is not fair. Life is not certain. And we're left feeling empty. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Solomon is finding that life outside of God means nothing. That is something that God built into us from the beginning. Ecclesiastes 3, real quick. 3 in verses 10 to 11. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. That word world is eternity in the Hebrew. God hath set eternity in their heart. Animals cannot grasp at eternal things. Animals live in the now. Man can grasp at eternal, and so he chases it. He chases eternal satisfaction and fulfillment, and yet never attains it. And this chase can cause a man to be frustrated, and that frustration, that emptiness, that feeling of vanity that Solomon is left with, leads to seeking out answers. And by coming to the conclusion that the answer is not in the world, because the world is uncertain and unfair and vain, then we are left seeking elsewhere and are hopefully led to God. God is the only source of eternal, lasting fulfillment. John 4 and verse 14, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into lasting eternal life. So reading through Ecclesiastes may make us feel depressed, but it has a purpose. It prepares the mind, the carnal mind, to accept the answer, because the answer contradicts everything that the world and our human nature tells us is valuable and worth our attention and effort. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 to 10 records Solomon's deductions and exhortations to the ecclesia of God regarding these experiments. And a major theme is showing the value of wisdom and man's inability to be saved by wisdom alone. And the last two chapters, chapters 11 to 12, are his final conclusions. Ecclesiastes 11, Solomon gives advice for what to do with the uncertainty of life. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 2, give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. We don't know what will happen tomorrow. Be generous so that if you find yourself in trouble, others are willing to offer help. Verse 5, as thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. We don't know how God works or what he can do. Busy yourself so that God might bless our efforts. Verse 6, in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. be generous and enterprising, because we don't know how it will all work out. And yet, there is one thing that is certain. Verse 9, "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment." Life is uncertain, but one thing is certain. Judgment will be there for us at the end. Ecclesiastes 12, verses 1 to 8, describes the ending of one's life. "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain." When we're young, set roots in God before we grow up and responsibility sets in, and it becomes more difficult. "And the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail. Because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Wherever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity." This is the decline of old age. This is the end of all mankind, the wise, the fool, the rich, and the poor. In verse 9, "Moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed, and sought out, and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written upright was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads, and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd." Nails fastened are secure. They can be relied upon like the words from the ultimate shepherd. In verse 12, "And further, by these, my son, be admonished. In making many books, of making many books, there is no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh." The wisdom of the world is a weariness. Solomon has expanded vast resources and energy to explore these life questions, and he reaches the answer here. Verse 13, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man." This is the completed, the filled, the satisfied man. Following this path of life, we have the potential to attain everlasting fulfillment. No more treadmill, no more vain chasing, no more filling the void that can never be filled. The work we do in the truth is stockpiled and will still be relevant after we die, unlike all the other cares of the world. Verse 14, "For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." Try as he might, Solomon could not find anything in the world that would give mankind lasting fulfillment. So why didn't God ask Solomon to embark on this journey? Because God gave mankind the answer a long time ago. Deuteronomy 17, verse 19, details the charge to all the kings of Israel. "And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of his law, of this law, and these statutes, and do them." Under the law in Leviticus 22 and verse 31, "Therefore shall ye keep my commandments, and do them. I am the Lord." And finally, the words of Jesus Christ in Matthew 19, in verses 16 to 17. "And behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do, that I may have eternal life? And he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments."
Thank you for listening to the Good Christadelphian Talks podcast. We hope this talk helped you in your walk. If you would like to hear more, please subscribe for new episodes and leave a review in Apple Podcast or whichever service you are using to help more people find the show when they search for it. If you enjoyed this particular talk, please share it with someone who you think might enjoy it as well. For show notes on the talk you just listened to, visit our show page at anchor.fm/GCT or check the show notes section of your podcast player. Please share your thoughts on the talk from this week on our Facebook or Instagram pages, where we are at Good Christadelphian Talks, on Twitter, where we are at GCT_podcast, or leave a comment on our YouTube channel, where these talks are posted as well. If you know of a great talk, we want to know about it too. Send a suggestion to our email at goodchristadelphiantalks@gmail.com or message us on any of our social media accounts. Thank you for listening. God bless, and talk to you next week.